Hi, this is Mac O'Keefe from the Penn State Nittany Lions, and you're listening to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast on Inside Lacrosse.
Coming to you from the IL Podcast Studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse, it's the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast, featuring Inside Lacrosse, ESPN, and Big Ten Network analyst, my old friend, Mark Dixon. I'm your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, let's get it. Dixie, it's championship weekend, and this is a special podcast. You are in the studio for the first time in weeks.
Yes, you dragged me into the worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse. Okay, I'm happy to be here, but I'm not happy to be here. Over the phone is so much more convenient. I get so much more done.
Of course it is. You don't have
done.
To come downtown and park and get in here. And
yeah, it's always good to see Teresa, the lady who runs the building. She does a fantastic job. She's a sweetheart, so it's great to see her. And I was able to catch up with a couple of guys in the office. It's great, but yeah, man, it just takes, you know, you guys don't have to put up with me. That's the biggest thing. You don't have to put up with me when
this is all true, but it already sounds better recording it like this.
You're so happy. You're so happy. You, I haven't seen you this happy since Hopkins beat Maryland a couple weeks ago.
All right, so for people who don't know, I refuse to let Dixie call in the past. Yeah. Until this year when I was able to access some new technology.
And there was no way I was going to be able to make it down. Physically impossible to make it down.
So, and that was one of the reasons I had to get some new software on my computer and do a whole bunch of different things. But I have to listen to this in order to edit it and produce it and post it. I probably hear it once when we talk about it and then hear it at least one more time when I'm editing it. Sometimes I have to rewind and cut out different parts. So I listen to this podcast a lot, and then I usually check it, you know, once it's posted. I listen to it in my car or something on the way to work. I love to hear your voice, Dix, but I check it out, make sure it's okay. So I hear this so many times. So when the audio can be better quality, like it is now, I think it's going to be better.
You get so upset.
I get excited about it. Now watch. There'll be some technical difficulty because I almost forgot how to record it this way because we got to do it a completely different way when we do it over the phone. So we'll see how good this turns out.
What if we get this thing all the way finished and you forgot to hit the record button?
No, we're recording.
You're becoming quite the techno beaver. I love it. It's great.
I've had to out of necessity.
Yeah. I've watched your evolution as a producer over the last couple of years. It's impressive. You got the interviewing down. You got the remote down. We're doing it live. You prefer vinyl? You like vinyl? Hey, Bolf. Try to do it. Hey, Bolf.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Bolf, I finally figured out how to get a remote. What you got to do is you call in, and I hit the record button, and then we could talk about the call. Hey,
that's the worst flunky impression you've ever done. Yeah, you've done much better than that. You're slipping.
My bad. Should I do it like eating shrimp? Like, they had something popped up on my Twitter feed. It was the 10-year anniversary of Baba Booey's first pitch at the Mets game. So it was 2009. Believe it or not, it was 10 years ago.
And his last pitch.
But the pitch was hysterical, but Artie Lang was on the show at the time. And when Howard brought it up, all you hear is Artie's like, oh, God. Yeah, so I was there. And, you know, I'm like standing there. And I'm like, Gary's going to throw the ball out. And then I had to duck. I was like, oh. And then Artie does that. He's like, and between Howard and Artie laughing at Baba Booey. And then he comes in and you see those big teeth. I mean, those teeth are huge. And he is constantly licking his licking his lips to try. And he's just like, he reminded me of a good friend of mine, like when he gets shamed, how his face turns. Yeah. And Baba Booey is just, he's just completely, so anyway, if you ever throw the first pitch out at a game, I'll help you out. I'll be your Artie.
Thanks. I feel like if I ever had the opportunity to do that, I'd be pretty good at it. I think I'd be better than most that attempt.
I mean,
I played college baseball.
Fafafui said he was. Did you play baseball at Hopkins?
I did.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, my freshman year.
Okay, I was going to say you didn't play.
Before I lettered in track my senior year. Ever tell you that story?
No.
So my work study job the assistant, the defensive coordinator of the football team, was also the head track coach, Bob Benson. He's now a defensive coordinator at Penn. Used to be the head coach at Georgetown and a couple other places.
Because the coaches at Hopkins had to wear many hats.
Back in those days.
Let's not forget that Bill Tierney, when he was a defensive coach for Don Zimmerman, was the head men's soccer coach.
Sure.
As was John Haas when he was the defensive coordinator under Don Zimmerman. He was there. So both Bill Tierney and John Haas were men's soccer coaches at Johns Hopkins.
Yeah, so you know I played football for 4 years. So my senior year, it's the spring, and my work-study job is in the athletic department, and Coach Benson's like, hey, I need you to help me move some stuff out on the track, like move the pits around or something, because the high jumpers are going to – they're warming up. I'm like, oh, okay. So I go out there, and I look at what they're jumping, and it was like 4.5 feet.
Right.
So it looked low, and they're warming up to that. And I go, Coach, is that what your high jumpers are doing? He's like, yeah. I was wearing like jeans.
You were in khakis?
And running shoes. And I'm like, I can jump that right now without stretching, without warming up.
And hurdling it.
No.
Just hurdling
no,
it.
No, I Fosbury flop.
What is it called?
Fosbury flop. Named after the famous high jumper Dick Fosbury.
Okay.
So I
Fozzie Bear?
I jumped without warming up in street clothes over what the other guys on the team were doing.
Right.
And Coach Benson's like, you're on the track team now.
And then all the rest of the guys watching you went back to D level and their biochem projects. And also,
that's how I got on the track team. I lettered. I placed in some meets.
That was the...
I had no idea what I was doing.
That was the funny thing about Hopkins was, and especially, I want to sound like a total jerk right now, but being a Division I lacrosse player, we used to play basketball all the time, and there were at least 8 or 10 guys on my lacrosse team that could have started at Hopkins.
On the basketball team?
On the basketball team. Pete Jacobs.
Of course. Reardon.
I don't know if Terry played basketball. Terry was big.
He was pretty good.
Brendan Cody was an excellent basketball player.
Okay.
Dave Petromala.
Yeah, Petro's a good ball player.
An incredible
Brian Volker.
Player.
Really Volks, good basketball excellent. Player. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they would have started. Like, Pete Jacobs would have definitely started. He could have played probably Division I basketball. But I don't know about the other guys starting. Our basketball team is pretty good. Well, you make a good point. But also, I've played basketball with a lot of those guys who are on your team. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this guy is a Division I.
Oh, no. Basketball, I think, is that special sport where you could be a tremendous lacrosse player, a really good baseball player, a really good swimmer. Just a really good athlete, but you can't play basketball. That happens.
Like, I'd say the opposite. I'd say you can specialize in a particular sport,
right,
with a certain skill set. But basketball is the true identity of someone who's a good athlete. I think people who can, it's running and jumping and
hand eye coordination.
Yeah, and
because you got to dribble
speed and
dribble at the same time.
Yeah,
as you're
so
running.
I think it's the opposite. It's a good indicator of athletic ability.
You were right, though. You are right. There were guys on my lacrosse team that when we would play hoops, it was they couldn't walk and chew gum at the same time.
We'll talk about it after this thing because I can think of a couple guys in particular that I don't want to name names.
Okay.
But it's just a testament to how far the Hopkins, like, their track program is...
Is really good now.
Everything is good. All their spring sports are in the NCAA tournament. Our baseball team is now playing in... They swept the conference tournament, swept the first round of the NCAAs, and now they're hosting a super regional, whatever that means. The women's and men's lacrosse teams both made the NCAA tournament. The track teams won the conference championship, men's and women's, and the tennis teams have won, like, 10 conference championships in a row. I mean, I wouldn't be able to just walk out and get on the track team.
You don't think?
Days. No, I don't think
even
so.
At 48 years old?
Definitely not.
Wearing your Jordache jeans and your...
If there's a low jump, I might be able to get it on the team as the low jumper.
You'd be like the Bill Murray skit when he was Hercules in Saturday Night Live.
Exactly.
Go lift that rock over there. That rock is much too large.
But I could lift that one. Small.
I would be, if I went out for the track team, I would be the John Belushi character with the little chocolate O's. I don't know if you remember the little chocolate donuts. So John Belushi's like, little chocolate O's have been on my training table ever since I was a kid. So
yes,
he's running,
I do remember that.
And he's like smoking a cigarette, eating the little chocolate O's.
Okay. See, Dix, this is why it's better to be sitting face to face with you.
I don't know.
It's hard to tell these stories over the phone.
I don't know.
All right, Dix. So last weekend, one thing, besides four fabulous games, there was one thing that kind of came out of it in an officiating way. You're a college
What was that?
You're a college official. what's been a chatter in the officiating community about the Maryland game and the need for instant replay?
Honestly, there hasn't been any this week. So I think those
that surprises me a little bit.
Well, I mean, there was. I'm part of a text group of a number of Division I officials, and when it was happening, so my younger son had a game that day, got home, and literally turned the game on with 4 minutes left, and that's when everything happened in the game, except for the Jared Bernhardt goal that has been deemed controversial, the goal he scored for Maryland. But when it was happening, I can't publicly comment on, you know, officiating, but it was very strong opinions. And then some guys are like, what happened? I'm not watching the game. I'm at so-and-so. I'm at such-and-such. And like, we're describing what went on. And then those folks were able to watch the replay later. And but as far as this week goes in terms of referees talking about it and things of that nature, first of all, I'm not part of the NCAA pool of officials that is working the NCAA tournament. So I'm not part of any email groups.
Understood.
I'm not part of any chat groups. I'm not part of any instructional directional groups at all. So there might be some conversation going on in there, which there probably is. But just that those hard conversations in terms of change and direction, that'll happen in the offseason.
Do you feel there is a need for instant replay?
How long have I been saying we need instant replay? I've been talking about instant replay for like 6 years now. Yeah, hell yeah. I say it on virtually every television game I do. I immediately thought of the 2015 Yale-Maryland game. And that was, even with...
Just remind people what happened in that one.
That was a one-goal game late, and a Yale player shot the ball, hit the bottom of the crossbar, ball dropped straight down, and then bounced out.
But past the goal line.
It looked like it was past the goal line. At Maryland, I don't want to single out Maryland, but it's tricky. They have purple lines. And those purple lines, to remind people, are in honor of Ryan Young. Remember Ryan Young, yeah. The attackman who led Maryland to the 2011 national championship game, right? Mm-hmm. I forget his graduation
year. It
was
early in Tillman's career.
Exactly.
Before his mother.
Ryan Young's mother died of pancreatic cancer, I believe, and purple is that color for that tumor type. So they line their field is lined with purple, meaning the sideline, end lines, restraining box, midfield line, and the goal lines. So when that ball hits straight down, so you've got a white ball, but a purple line, and then all the rubber pellets are shooting up. So that would have been difficult to ascertain but it looked like it was a good goal. So that's immediately what I thought of. And now, more than ever, with the dive and everything that's involved with that, we need instant replay. I've been saying it all season long, and I don't know if it's going to come. I really don't, because you've got this, we're all lathered up from Saturday, and as time passes, things, you know, emotions start to go down, and reasoning takes over. And the thing with lacrosse is, if you institute it for Division I, it's got to be instituted for Division II, Division III, JUCO, every level of college lacrosse. Now, the shot clock was grandfathered in slowly when it was the 30-second timer on, and then the visible 30-second shot clock. And now we're at the 80, and I think everybody this year had to some way, somehow, come up with an 80-second shot clock on each end of the field or at the midfield or something. So anyway.
So to answer your question, I understand like it's got to permeate all divisions.
I'm frustrated. I'm really frustrated.
But how can they say for the championship weekend they'll have replay but not all NCAA tournament?
Are you talking about on the current NCAA tournament?
The current.
It's only for timing issues.
Okay.
There is no instant replay for judgment calls. There's no instant replay.
I misunderstood that.
Unless something's been slipped in over the last week or two that I'm not aware of, you can't evaluate a push, a dive, crease, goal, no goal when it comes to timing. So, was a shot released before the clock hit zero? Think about the Big Ten championship game, all the timing issues. Let's go back and see when that ball went, if the clock continues to run or doesn't start when it's supposed to start. It's all timing issues. There is no instant replay. There will be no instant replay that I'm aware of this weekend for Division I, Division II, or Division III for evaluation of the play that we saw last weekend, Maryland, Virginia, for the play that we saw, Maryland, Virginia, Jared Bernhardt, was he or was he not in the crease, dives, all that stuff. There is no instant replay for that.
Thanks for clarifying that. I misunderstood what they were talking about then. All right, Dix, enough rules talk. What's your role this weekend, championship weekend?
Radio for Westwood One. It'll be me and Dave Ryan and Jason Horowitz. We will be doing the semifinals on Saturday and then the finals on Monday. Then I'm also working, doing the Division II, Division III games on Sunday with Dave Ryan for NCAA.com. So it'll be a busy weekend in Philadelphia.
Yeah, you got a lot. You're doing all the games, basically.
I'm doing all the games. I'm looking forward. I think our hotel is near Reading Terminal, though, this year in Center City. And I have to get one of those sandwiches from Denick's. The, what's it, roast pork sandwich with the broccoli rob?
Yeah, they're
have you had one of those?
I think so. I love that. The porchetta. It's like the thinly sliced pork.
I think that's what it is.
With
yeah.
The rosemary.
I think so. Yeah, so I'm not good. Sure. A couple years ago when we were in Philadelphia, my wife was with me, and it was the Sunday, and I wasn't doing D2, D3. So we walked from Penn Landing, where we were staying, all the way up to Center City and got in line at the Knicks. And literally, it was a guy and a girl, young couple, and the guy ordered one, and they had one left after that. And his girlfriend's like, "I don't want one. I want something." And she's like, get it. And I'm like, "No, don't get it. Don't." She got it. And I'm like, "It's a complete waste."
That's a long walk.
It was a really long walk, but it was a nice day. You know, with my wife, and we're just looking around the city.
Yeah. So for people going to Philly this weekend, you're gonna have a great time. The weather's gonna be good. Philly is a very underrated, walkable city.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of good places to eat.
Great places to eat. Now, okay, I think I may have said this before. I'll say it again, and I'm not trying to piss anybody off, but I'm not a big Philly steak cheesesteak guy. Like, I don't think Philly cheesesteaks are anything special.
But Cheese Whiz is gross.
I don't like Cheese Whiz at all. I mean, I grew up on cheesesteak sandwiches in the Baltimore area with lettuce, tomato, mayonnaise, onion. Like, apparently you're not supposed to do that in Philly. It's either Cheese Whiz or...
That's at Pat's and Gino's, which, in my opinion, both of those places are completely overrated.
Okay.
I like, there's a place near Penn called Abner's. There's a place called Jim's. Like, I like a chopped steak with provolone cheese.
Okay.
Which you can get, just not at Pat's.
But if you
and
ask
Gino's,
for
which
mayonnaise,
are right next
but if you ask for mayonnaise on it, like, don't they look at you funny?
They will.
Okay. So where should I go for a cheese steak?
Again, you can get one all over the place.
Jim's. What's going to be Tiki near
Pete's.
What's going to be near Center City?
Well, if you're downtown,
because I will get a cheesesteak. I will get one when in Rome.
There's a lot of good places. There's Abner's is over by Penn, which is a good. It's a ride.
I'm not riding.
It won't be hard to find a good cheesesteak place. Although downtown, there's not as many places that I can think of that are right there.
I'll find one.
Pat's and Gino's are like 9th and Passyunk, like in South Philly. But here's a tip for you experienced fans. After the games on Saturday, there are a lot of really good Italian restaurants between where the stadiums are and Center City, like off of the main drag.
Walnut?
No. What's the main street that goes from the stadiums all the way up to?
I-95?
No, it's like Market Street, but it's not Market Street. But there's a lot of places.
South Street?
No. Broad Street. Broad Street, Dix. Why couldn't I think of Broad Street?
You used to work there.
But there's a lot of places that are good Italian restaurants that are BYO. So you can bring your own favorite beverages into the place, and it'll save you a lot of money, and the food is amazing. So look for a couple of BYO Italian restaurants, like in the South Philly, between the stadiums and Center City. That's my hot tip for this week. For you foodies coming to Philly.
Hot tip.
Yeah. All right, Dex. It's finally time. Let's get to the games. There's two rematches that will take place where both of the first games had some type of extenuating circumstances. The first game, you know, Duke and Virginia, there was a weather delay.
Yes, I remember. Yeah.
That sort of a four-hour weather delay. Virginia was a road team. That, you know, it bumped them a little bit, and they didn't have
Michael Krause
playing. And in the second game, T. Erland was just dominant on faceoffs against Gerard Urseri, who's a very good faceoff man himself. You know, he's an honorable mention IL Media All-American. he's very good, and I wouldn't expect him to have the same type of performance. But maybe, who knows? TD's amazing. But let's talk about that first game. Number 2 seed Duke, 13-4 on the season now, will play number 3 seed Virginia, 2 ACC foes. Virginia's 15-3 on the year. Winners of the ACC tournament and regular season title. Duke, however, beat them in the regular season 12-7 on April 13th. This game will be at noon on ESPN2.
So Duke has won 19 out of 20 against Virginia.
It's insane.
Over the last
That is insane. These guys are rivals.
They are. That being said, I consider Virginia to be the favorite in this game. I think that they're playing. It's interesting. When you look at Duke, well, let me go through Virginia first, okay? I just think they're playing at a high level right now. Yes, they live dangerously. Yes, did they get a little bit of a mulligan last week? But that doesn't erase the fact that the defense has improved. Goaltending has improved. They're doing a great job at the faceoff dot. Petey LaSala has really given them a lift and added a dimension to their ball club. You look at the first game, and this was, again, Michael Krause missed the game. Matt Moore scored 4 goals, all in the first half. Mikey Herring had 2. Laviano had 1, okay? Ryan Conrad wasn't the player then that he is now. He is turned into an animal.
Asserting himself. He's got the senior, I'm not losing.
Yes, he has got that chip on his shoulder mentality. Dox Akin was a non-factor in the first game, at least on the score sheet. I expect that to be different on Saturday. And this is a Virginia team. It has not been a championship weekend since 2011. A Virginia program, the players, this is their first time on the big stage. That's one of my big questions. How will they handle the link on Saturday, first game against Duke, against a team that features players that were here last year?
One thing we'll have in this podcast, Dix, is we had an opportunity to hear from all 4 of the coaches that are playing this weekend, and we'll also have an interview with Mac O'Keefe later in the podcast at the end. But one of the things that was asked of Lars Tiffany is, what was that process of turning UVA around from a team that couldn't beat a team like Duke forever?
They didn't win an ACC game for, what, 4 or 5 years, right?
To become ACC champs in his third year, and how that process took place, but also how interesting it was to hear him talk about how it took a long time to turn their culture around, and that was the biggest factor. And here's what Coach Tiffany had to say about that.
This transition from Brown University for myself, Kip Turner, Sean Kerwin, to the University of Virginia here in Charlottesville started 3 years ago. And we left a program that we loved, maybe a little bit more myself because I was an alum of Brown University. But we saw an incredible opportunity to be here at the University of Virginia, a program steeped in tradition of championships in lacrosse and certainly many other sports. And we all saw it as an opportunity to grow as coaches, to learn from the fantastic coaches that are here at UVA. What we found was a program filled with talent, but not cohesive. And so we went right to work on implementing our style of play, which is up-tempo, fast-paced, but also making a significant dynamic shift in the culture. It's taken a lot longer than we expected with the culture piece. And we still have work to do there. But what we continue to promote to the men is that everything that we're doing, we don't deserve a thing. We don't deserve 1 cent. We earn it. And this group has made more sacrifices than any team I've been a part of or known. And this group continues to sacrifice their Saturday nights, their social opportunities. And at University of Virginia, there's a tremendous number of those. And so what's been very, very rewarding for all of us is that those sacrifices there's been dividends paid off. And I keep reminding them, we don't deserve this. And it doesn't mean we necessarily were going to win. But you can see you've earned these wins. And when you win as many close games as we have, every little sacrifice, putting the right things in your body, it's made a difference. So I'm really fortunate and grateful to have great leadership with the 3 captains, Michael Krause, Ryan Conrad, who are obviously fantastic lacrosse players and get a lot of attention and score a lot of goals and make plays in the middle field, along with David Smith, who's a short stick teammate, who doesn't get much attention in the limelight. But he might be the strongest of them all. He's the one who will speak that phrase, truth to power. And, you know, most of us lean on him more so than the other two in terms of the, you know, the voice and making tough decisions. So I'm very fortunate to have great leadership with those three. And then the cupboard wasn't bare, as I alluded to earlier. We have a tremendous amount of talent here. Dom Starja, Mark Van Arsdale, they've done a fantastic job recruiting. And, you know, Sean, Kip, and I have inherited a boatload of talent. And we're really fortunate to be able to coach these men and to realize their talent on the field.
All right, Dix. Also in that first game, Duke got a little bit of production out of guys like Sean Lowry and CJ Carpenter, who each had two goals. What are they going to need to do again this time to get a W?
There's two things that jump out to me immediately for Duke. One is this is a defensive team. Typically, Duke has always been known as an offensive team. Second thing is when you get to this time of year, Duke is typically the favorite. And it's play Duke in February because they're going to drop a game or two or three in the early months of February and March. But come April, May, this team is buttoned up and they are raring to go. Out of all four teams that are in championship weekend, I think Duke is the one that's being questioned the most. Are they really that good? Are they really of Final Four caliber kind of thing? Yeah, they are, because they're here. And they've got a terrific defense. Cade Van Rapphorst, J.T. Giles-Harris. I put Turner Upgren down as my X factor last week against Notre Dame. I thought he played a pretty good game. They've got Brad Smith. They've got Nakai Montgomery. But you're right. In order to win this game, they're going to have to get those secondary guys to step up. Your Robertsons, your Manowns, your Lowrys, those kinds of players are going to have to step up. So is this the Duke team that we've seen in the past that has come to championship weekend? Even is this the Duke team that we saw last year headlined by Justin Gutterding, Tourton finalist, first-team All-American, right? I don't think so, but still, this is a very good Duke lacrosse team. But I do believe that they're the underdogs heading into Saturday's game against Virginia.
Yeah, earlier this week we asked Coach Janowski about playing Virginia again and how maybe the first game was a bit of a fluke because of that weather delay. And here's what Coach Janowski had to say about Virginia.
Listen, we knew that Krause didn't play in the first game, and that was certainly and listen, sometimes, you know, teams play better when one of their top players were out. But, you know, we knew that when the game was over, you know, we dodged a little bit of a bullet. We also had a four-hour delay, you know, in the start time of the game because of storms in the area. So instead of playing at 12, I think we started at 4:30. And you know, maybe Virginia, you know, that as the away team, maybe that hurt them a little bit more than it hurt us. So we recognize that we kind of maybe have to throw out that first game. You know, Virginia is so explosive and so unselfish. Any one of their players can have 4-1 at half. You know, I don't know if it was a matter of us making adjustments or a matter of us or the game just going, you know, a different way. But, you know, we recognize that, listen, they get the best recruiting classes every year. They are extremely talented. And, you know, just so dangerous. And you've got to defend, you know, you have to defend their poles. You have to defend their faceoff man. You've got to defend every guy who steps over that midfield line.
All right, Dix, in the second game of the day, the number one overall seed, Penn State, the 16-1 juggernaut out of the Big Ten, will play the number five seed and defending champion Yale Bulldogs, 14-3 at 2:30.
A replay of a game from way back in February, won by Yale 14-13. And this is a Yale team that I think they're very good offensively. They found a way to outlast Penn last weekend, even though they gave up a late lead to the Quakers. I think when you talk about Yale, Jackson Morrill, Matt Gaudette, Matt Brandau on attack, they're humming. They don't have Ben Reeves. Okay, we know that. And other teams don't have guys they had last year, but I like the pieces that Yale has in place. And then the midfield, they've been a little bit unpredictable, a little bit inconsistent, but Jack Tye, Lucas Kotler, Joey Sessa, Brian Tevlin. I mean, it's a they're deep. They're a deep midfield core. The problems are on the defensive end. The defense is suspect at best. Chris Fake does not look like himself. He does not look like the same player he was a year ago. I don't know if it's an injury or something along those lines. What they do have, a T.D. Erland, the best faceoff man in the country. He's coming into his second championship weekend, albeit wearing the blue and white of Yale versus the purple and gold of Albany a year ago. But he could be their X factor, their main man, their difference maker. He could be everything on Saturday to this Yale team.
And earlier this week, we asked Andy Shea about how important TD is to that team and how comfortable he feels with him as his leading man at the X. And here's Coach Shea.
TD Erland makes me feel more comfortable all the time because he's incredible. But at the same time, we know this is going to be a huge challenge because he had such a good game against these guys. I mean, these guys, they're great coaches, and these kids are tremendous competitors. They're going to have adjustments going in, and I think that we have to be ready for their adjustments, whatever they do. Their faceoff guy is one of the best in the country as well. Once again, we'd be foolish to say, okay, this is what we're going to plan on. Been doing this long enough to know that you can't plan on one facet of the game all the time and be successful. So we're ready for – we have backup plans if they adjust and the layers go pretty deep, in both sides of the ball and at the faceoff X. So it's comforting, yes, because he's – like I said, he's so successful. But once again, we got to keep our guard up as well.
All right, Dix, on the other side of the field, this Penn State offense is unbelievable. Since May, started the Big Ten tournament, they're averaging more than 20 goals a game, really amping up their offense. Last week, Mac O'Keefe with 9 goals, NCAA tournament record. Ament has 91 assists now, NCAA record. O'Keefe, 75 goals. He broke the Penn State record by 24, which he set 2 years ago. And the NCAA record for goals in a season is 82. If they were to make it to Monday, the pace he's on, he could set the record for NCAA single-season goals. It's an unbelievably impressive offense. Can Yale slow him down?
That's a big question, and that will determine whether or not the Bulldogs advance to Memorial Day to defend their national title. Everybody is picking Penn State this weekend, and for good reason. They are the most complete team left in the NCAA field. Yeah, I think when you look at Duke, you could characterize them as the best defensive team left in the field. When you look at Yale, you can talk about being here last year and pulling it through, even though they have some new not new faces, but guys with extended roles with the graduations of Connor Mackey and Tyler Warner and Ben Reeves, etc. And then you look at Virginia, and they might be looked at as maybe the most athletic team, but Penn State's looked at as the most complete team. And two things: you're going to have a solid game plan, and then you're going to have to execute that game plan some way, somehow. And part of that game plan has to be slowing down this Penn State offense. I don't think anyone's under the delusion that they're going to hold Penn State to under 12, 13 goals. I mean, maybe even stretch that out to 16, 17. I don't know. You know you're going to have to win a shootout. It's just a situation. Are you going to have more possession than they will? And in this game, that should be the case. The first time around, T.D. Erland won 80% of the faceoffs. Yale's going to have to find a way to score goals and score a lot of goals and keep the ball away as much as they can for that Penn State offense. And look, the Penn State D gets overlooked quite a bit, I think. They're a solid, experienced unit. If Colby Kinese is a good goalie. I thought he was shaky early against Hopkins. I thought he was shaky early against UMBC. But when the chips are down, late in that game against Hopkins, he made a save at the end of regulation that got that game into overtime. So Penn State is the most complete team. They are the favorite coming into this weekend, but there's cliche police. Look out. There's a reason we play the games, and we're not handing the trophy to Penn State just saying, hey, just go ahead and take this back, and we're not even going to play the game. So this should be a great game, and it should be very high scoring. And wow. I mean, just wow. You know, Yale, geez, Penn. Penn was the team outside of, for me, it was Penn State favorites. Virginia might be the team that could beat them. But how they will they respond on 2 days' rest? And then also Penn was another team that I'm like, at this point in the season, they could probably challenge, if not beat, Penn State. They played them to a one-goal game earlier in the season. Now Penn's gone, and this is the team that beat them in Yale. So let's see what happens.
So that face-off discrepancy was a huge factor in their one-goal loss back in February.
And this is Gerard Arcari that he's facing off against. Arguably the second or third best. Well, not arguably. I think he's top three in the country. It's Woodall from Towson, Arcari, Penn State, Erlin, Yale.
Gallagher?
Kyle Gallagher. Yeah, I'd throw him in there. Sure. So, top four. But what Penn State has developed over the last couple of weeks is Jake Glatz. So they do have a second guy. If Arcari should struggle again, they could throw Glatz out there and see how he does.
So Coach Zambroni addressed the face-off discrepancy and what they're planning to do with Arcari and their wing play.
You know, I think for Gerard, starting with Gerard, I think that it's important for him just to go in there with great confidence from, you know, the entire season. I mean, he's had a log of great experiences, some very successful and some where he's had to learn through some of his defeats. And I think he's extremely well balanced and prepared going into this contest. I think in the last couple of games, he's done a really nice job of just including his wing play, including more guys in there. And at the other side of it is he needs to understand this is not just him. So there's a lot of people that will lean in and have an input on this game. And, you know, going against an elite guy in Spencer last weekend, an elite competitor in TD Erlin this weekend, that's, you know, those are daunting tasks, but it's not just one guy's opportunity or responsibility to make sure that we win or lose games there. It's going to be the whole team. So I think taking some of that pressure off of Gerard and just having him do his very best is going to be in our best interest. And the other side is we've leaned on our alums. We've got a lot of great ones that are willing to contribute all year in multiple positions, and including the faceoff X. So, you know, from time to time, we've definitely used those resources and gotten a lot of great advice. So we'll take from pretty much anyone. At the end of the day, we'll just try to do what we think is in the best interest of our guys as we go.
So, Dix, it sets up for a super exciting weekend, and one of the players that...
Are you going to Philadelphia this weekend?
I will be in Philadelphia all weekend.
Wow.
Yes.
All right, look at you. Where are you staying?
At my brother's house, my brother Michael, in Wilmington.
Wilmington, Delaware?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
My
there are a lot of great Italian restaurants there?
There are a few.
Okay.
It has its own little Italy. But my niece is getting married on Saturday at 2 o'clock in Old Town, Philadelphia.
So you're not going to be at La Crosse at all?
No.
Oh, okay.
Family. I'm actually really excited.
Yeah.
I will have to watch the games. What I'm really excited about is how am I going to get Westwood One on the radio on my way to the wedding from Wilmington to Philadelphia? I got to find this on the radio.
I believe it's Sirius XM Channel 84. Channel 84. And I don't know about local affiliates just yet, but if you have Sirius, which a lot of people do, Sirius XM Channel 84.
Okay, that's how I'll find it. But yeah, I got this wedding I got to get to. But one of the players who will be on display, who's having, as we mentioned before, one of the best seasons in NCAA history, really.
Crazy.
75 goals, is Mac O'Keefe, a junior attackman, second team IL Media All-American from Penn State. And I had a chance to sit down with him this week to talk about his team, his season, and playing in Philadelphia for the national championship.
We're joined on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast by Penn State junior attackman, Mac O'Keefe. Mac, welcome into the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, congratulations on earning Penn State's first championship weekend appearance. Really cool stuff. How's that feel to accomplish that, and what's the current excitement level in Happy Valley?
It's certainly a great feeling, you know, just going through everything over the years. The ebbs and flows that we've been through as a team, you know, not being able to see the end of the tunnel necessarily, but just the path that we've had this year, it's been really great, and we're definitely not done yet. So we've really brought together this week in practice.
hey, there are lots of firsts for this Penn State program in 2019. For instance, first time beating Johns Hopkins, first Big Ten title, first NCAA tournament win, first Final Four. And you guys are assaulting the Penn State and NCAA record book. How have you guys been able to shake off the pressure that comes with those uncharted waters and continue to accomplish new goals?
Yeah, we actually talked about this recently in practice. The focus was, you know, you have to believe it before you can actually see it. You know, we've never experienced anything like this. So, you know, that the vision has to be there before you can actually accomplish it. And every day we come into practice focus, and we have the same mindset and ready to go. And just, I think we've brought it every single day.
So while it's new for you and your teammates, Coach Tambroni's certainly been to championship weekend before. How has practice been this week? And has Coach shared any advice about limiting the distractions that come with a championship weekend appearance?
Yeah, there's definitely been talk about just staying focused and trying to block out everything on the outside because it's just unnecessary distractions. But I think practice hasn't really changed much. We just try to stick to what we do every single day because it's gotten us to where we are today, and hopefully we continue that on.
All right, bear with me here for a second. I'm going to blow you up a little bit. You have had a remarkable season. You have 75 goals now, breaking your own school record of 51 from a couple years ago by 24 goals. And with a couple games possible this week, you have a chance to shatter the NCAA record of 82. First team All Big Ten, IL Media All-American, Big Ten Tournament MVP. What's been the key to your personal success and your team's offensive success?
I mean, I think it's just we work really well together. I mean, I know for a fact that I wouldn't have nearly as much success for myself if I didn't have the guys around me that I do. And I think just we work really well off of each other, and it's a very cohesive unit. So I think together we're all overall able to have a lot of success.
Now, your line mate, Grant Amen, has been instrumental in your team's success. Since the beginning of May, you guys are averaging more than 20 goals a game in your two Big Ten tournament games and your NCAA games. That's just a crazy number. Grant was the player of the year in the Big Ten, first-team All-American, and he has an NCAA single-season record, 91 assists already, with a chance to get to the 100 mark, which is crazy. What kind of confidence do you and your teammates have going into a game knowing that if you just get open, he will find you?
It's a tremendous amount of confidence. He's the quarterback of our offense. He sees everything go through. And, I mean, we put a lot of trust in his hands, knowing that he's going to always find a guy. Even if he doesn't, he draws a lot of attention and just opens up a bunch of guys. So I think we just have the pieces around the field to help him out, and he certainly can just put the ball wherever you want it at all times. So he's definitely really, really been a big part of my success for sure.
All right, turning your attention to your opponent this week, you will face Yale in a much anticipated rematch from the game you lost back in February by a goal. It's the only blemish on your season. How has that game from February motivated or shaped you guys throughout the year? And did you take any lessons from it? And as it motivate you to avenge that loss as you get ready to play this weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if there's any team we want to play again, I would say it's them, just because they knocked us down early on in the season. But, yeah, they're obviously a great team coming off a great season last year, and I think this is a great opportunity for us to move forward as a program to beat a team like this. So it's a great opportunity in front of us.
Yeah, so let's get into the specifics of that. So you were down 13-8 in that game, but you came back and scored four of the last five goals. You had five goals yourself. Grant had two goals and seven assists. The difference was really at the faceoff with their faceoff guy, T.D. Erlin, going 25 of 31. What does Penn State need to do this week to get the win and move on to championship game on Monday?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to in between the 30s, you know, just winning the tough, gritty ground balls that can put us over the edge. I mean, last week against Loyola, that was a big emphasis for us, and I think we won that battle, and it really helped us come out with a victory.
So we've known well before the start of the season that championship weekend would be held in Philadelphia, Lincoln Financial Field. as first-time participants, I'd imagine you guys wouldn't care where it was. You'd play at a rest stop on the PA Turnpike. But you do have nine guys from the Philly area, including all three of your starting defensemen, who contribute a lot to your team, obviously. So, first of all, how are those guys reacting to playing where the Eagles play? And second, Nittany Lion Nation, will they be out in full force this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't stopped hearing it from them all week. We're going to play in the Bird Stadium. It's kind of annoying, to be honest. But, I'm super excited. We're going to have a great showing. It's going to be a whiteout. So it's going to be a great environment. I'm really excited to be a part of it.
Hey, and if you get past Yale, you'll play in the NCAA title game against either the Duke or UVA winner. It's a quick turnaround, but one your team's done this year twice, once down in March in Charlotte and again at the Big Ten tournament. What'd you guys learn from those weekends, and how do you feel those experiences prepare you for what's coming up?
Yeah, it's definitely tough, but, you know, you just got to take what you can from the game, learn from it, and move on extremely quick and just prepare your body for what's to come because you don't have much time at all. So you got to do whatever you can to get ready and whatever's best for the team.
All right, Mac, I like to do some rapid fire questions with all of my player guests. Are you ready?
Gotcha. Yep.
Okay. What players did you emulate as a kid?
I would say a little bit of, it was a bunch of guys actually. I would say Mark Matthews. I just loved his box Canadian style of play. Shooters wise, like Kevin Huntley, Ryan Brown, just a combination of them. And guys like Eric Lusby from Loyola, just some of those guys, I would just try and recreate their shots in the backyard and do my own version. I think that's what it's become now.
What's your favorite shot to take?
Probably low to high, top corners.
All right, I'm coming to State College for a game. Where should I go to eat before the game?
I would say the Field Burger joint.
All right. What's the best road trip in the Big Ten and why?
I really enjoy going to Maryland this year just because we've never been there before until this year, and it was just very special for us as a program and for our alumni just to come out with a victory this year.
All right. MLL or PLL?
That's a tough decision. I don't know. We'll see when it comes, I guess.
All right. And last question. What's the best non-lacrosse related thing about Penn State University?
Just the overall atmosphere. Everybody's very welcoming, very friendly. I've met a ton of great people here, and that's just what makes the university great. It's just more than just the sports, the people you meet here that make it such a great place.
All right, Mac O'Keefe, thank you so much. Thanks for joining us, and best of luck to you this Saturday against Yale.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So nice job again on the interview, Mac O'Keefe. What a sweet shooter. Just a guy who never stops moving on the offensive end of the field. It's uncanny how he locates Grant Amet. Grant Amet locates him. And it'll be interesting to see what defense the Yale Bulldogs employ against O'Keefe this time around. He is a special shooter. And what is he? What'd you say, 84?
82 is the 82 NCAA goals. Single season record.
And he has 75.
Miles Thompson in 2014 at Albany and John Reese from Yale 1990 both had 82 goals in 18 games. Mac has 75 goals in 17 games.
Wow. So he could theoretically, if not in the semifinal against Yale.
The way he's been playing.
Yeah, exactly.
He could tie it or break it in the semifinal.
But if they advance to Monday, he certainly has an opportunity to break that record.
And Grant might have a chance to get 100 assists in a season.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So in the first game, O'Keefe had 5 goals, and Ament had 2 goals and 7 assists in the first game against Yale. Not exactly shabby numbers or output. Man, this is going to be a great weekend.
It will be. You will be...
Are you not entertained?
Who are the guys that are going to show up at the wedding that are the wedding crashers? Or will you have wedding crashers at the event?
I doubt it.
No?
I doubt it. I think this is going to be a classy affair.
Hello, I'm Seamus Flynn, and this is my cousin Bobby. We're looking for a great time.
straight off the straight from Ireland. Yeah, no, I don't think that's gonna happen.
No,
no.
Okay, that'd be pretty funny if it did, though.
Yeah. Guy looks a lot like Vince Vaughn. No, it's gonna be a good time, I'm sure. And best wishes to Aaron and Patrick as they get ready for their nuptials. Family's all coming to town. It's going to be a lot of fun. I haven't seen some of them in a while. It's really going to be fun. All right, if you like what you heard, please do us a favor. Click on the subscribe button, leave a rating, share it with a friend. You can hit us up on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse. I'm at D_FLY, DFly. Or you can email me at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. Also, don't forget to check out our other podcasts. Drop a new one every weekday during the season. Dix, next time we do this, we'll have a national champion.
We will have a title holder. Someone will have claimed the belt.
So have a great weekend. Enjoy the games.